So if anybody can relate to that, the subtitle is Jacob, Joseph, and Judah. Now usually this passage of Scripture gets studied out as the story of Joseph. And it is the story of Joseph, but actually it's broader than that and it has some other concerns. The strategy of the writer of Genesis, who was the writer of the whole Torah, Genesis through Deuteronomy, the strategy here involves Joseph, but it also involves Jacob and Judah. And just the big picture is that God used Joseph to save Jacob's family, quite literally from starving to death. And he used Joseph to call Judah to be a godly man, to be the inheritor of Jacob. And so we're going to see that the end of the book of Judah, or excuse me, the end of the book of Genesis is really, the focus is on Judah. He's the fourth son of Jacob, and we're going to see why he ends up being the inheritor, but he's the one through whom the kings of Israel would come, David, and eventually Jesus, who was called the Lion of Judah. And so Judah is going to be the firstborn in the sense of being the blessed one, the one who inherits. So the world they lived in, they lived in this place called Canaan, and they were herders of sheep. They kept flocks, and they were wealthy men. Abraham was a wealthy man. And so Abraham had passed all he had on to Isaac, his son, and Isaac passed on all he had to Jacob. Well, Jacob had to do a little finagling to get it out of Isaac, because Isaac foolishly wanted to give it to his brother, and so Jacob had made sure that he ended up with it. But this place, there was no empire that had any dominance in it at all. It was kind of a no man's land there, kind of like the old West in America. There was no dominating legal or economic system. It was just survival as best you can. There were no social services in this world. The only protection you had was the protection of your family, looking out for one another. So marriages really weren't about love and romance nearly as much as they were about surviving. You looked out for one another because the only people you could trust in this life were your blood kin. There are still plenty of places on the earth that are like that. It's a tribal system. And in fact, it's really part of the reason that there's so much chaos in the Middle East right now is because we think, in the West, we think of them as nation states, but they mostly think of themselves as belonging to particular tribes. And the nation states are just kind of a later add-on. So your protection was your family, and a little bit bigger than that, it was the village you lived in, or maybe you lived in a fortified city where there were lots of families within that. But that was the law, and that was the protection. That's all you had. There was no one else to call if you couldn't figure it out yourself. You had to figure it out yourself. And so this story is being written down by Moses, though. And Moses has received already the law. And what you see in these stories is that Moses is careful to write down all the reasons that God ended up giving them the law. He gave them the law because they needed it. Most of the stuff you find in the law, you find broken in the book of Genesis. Certainly all of the Ten Commandments, and probably a whole lot more. So let me begin the text here in chapter 37. And I think one of the things that happens is that we don't really listen very carefully to the author, and I think we should do that. It starts off this way. Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, his father Isaac, and his father Abraham, the land of Canaan. And this is the account of Jacob's family line. Now, you're going to see this phrase a lot in the book of Genesis. And it doesn't always match the chapter headings. Sometimes it does. But those are the chapter beginnings. When you see that word, this is the account, it usually means it's literally translated, these are the generations of. And you see it all the way back at chapter 2. These are the generations of when God created the heavens and the earth. And then you see these are the generations of Adam, and these are the generations of Noah and all the people. So the book divides itself up that way. So always be looking for things like that as you read the book. This is the account of Jacob's family line. And what you'll also see, if you turn back one page, is that you get the genealogy of Esau, who was Jacob's twin brother, the brother who was not going to inherit. So this is a pattern in the book of Genesis. You'll see two genealogies, and the genealogy of the person who is not inheriting is given first, and that's kind of the last you really ever see of them. We've had the story of Jacob meeting Esau again after being in exile for 20 years, and so now we get Esau's descendants, and then we get the story of Jacob, and you're going to get his descendants. So it's not really the story of Joseph. It's the story of Jacob's family is what they're telling and what the scripture says. So now we begin. Joseph, a young man of 17, he was the second youngest son of Jacob, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah. Now you remember, Jacob had two wives, and each of them had a maidservant who became the concubine of Jacob. And these two women were named Bilhah and Zilpah, and they had sons along with the wives of Jacob. And so when Joseph was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, or concubines, and he brought their father a bad report about them. Never a good thing. Nobody likes a little brother who's a rat. And we don't get any words about Jacob doing anything about this report. There's a lot of times when Jacob doesn't act. He just takes the information. The sons of Zilpah and Bilhah are Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. And they already knew very clearly that they were not favored sons in this group of 12 boys. Joseph was the second youngest son, so all these other guys are in their 20s and 30s. They're not teenage boys. They're grown-ups. Joseph is a teenager, and he acts like one. Goes on in verse 3. Now Israel, that's Jacob's other name, loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age. Jacob's over 100 years old now. And he made an ornate robe for him. And when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Here's some family dynamic for you. Here's a Thanksgiving dinner together. This favoritism goes back in the generations. If you've read the story up to this point, you'll know that Jacob fell in love with a girl named Rachel and then got tricked into marrying his older sister first and then married Rachel. And these two women were in competition because he loved one and didn't love the other. And so the one he didn't love was the one who had all the sons first. And it was conflict between them. And that conflict grew out of the conflict he had his whole life with his brother Esau, whom his father favored because he came out of the womb a couple of minutes earlier than Jacob did, but he didn't really deserve to inherit his father, and he wasn't the one that he was. It was foretold at their birth, before their birth, that Jacob would inherit. And so all these family systems, generation after generation, the hurt people are hurting other people. It goes on. His older sons Jacob's older sons, in their 20s and 30s, were a reminder of all that he had suffered in exile. He tricked his brother out of his inheritance, he had to run for his life because Esau was a hunter and he was hacked off and he was going to kill his brother. So he went back to where Abraham came from, back to Haran, and lived there for 20 years, and that's where he got his wives, and that's where he had these sons, and now he had come back to the land of Canaan, where Isaac was, and where Abraham had come to. His sons were a reminder of all that he had suffered in that place, all the hot days and months out in the desert, herding sheep for his father-in-law, who stole from him and ripped him off in every way possible. And his older sons had learned from him. They learned how to survive. They learned what we now call situation ethics. You get the results you need any way you can. And that's what they learned. And they learned how to do it real well, because Jacob was a master at doing that. Verse 5. Joseph had a dream, the young boy, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He's mentioned this a couple of times now. He said to them, listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it. And his brothers said to him, do you intend to rule over us? Will you actually rule over us? And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. And then he had another dream and he told it to his brothers. Listen, I had another dream, and this time the sun and the moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me. In other words, his father and his mother and his 11 brothers. And when he told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, what is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you? His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Jacob was famous for not dealing with his sons very directly. In the chapter just before, in chapter 35, a little comment here. In all the goings on and the coming back from Haran to Canaan, Reuben, his oldest son, the one who should inherit, Reuben slept with Bilhah, his father's concubine. There was no law against it at that point, but there was a law later on in the law of Moses about that. Sleeping with your father's wife, even though she's not your mother. And it simply says, and Jacob heard about it. He kept his own counsel. He didn't do anything, but he heard about it. He didn't act. The chapter before that happened in a little town called Shechem, named after the guy who founded the town. Jacob's daughter, Dinah, had gone to meet the girls of the town while they were camped out there living with their sheep. She had been grabbed by the son of the king of this town, or the chief of this town, and raped and then held because he wanted to keep her as a wife. And it says that Jacob remained silent and waited for his sons to get back from the field. He didn't want them to find out because he knew what they would do. But he bided his time, and he waited to see how this would play out. He began a negotiation with Shechem. He didn't treat it like the crime it was, because it really wasn't against the law, since there was really no law. And it's part of the reason that the law of Moses would end up dealing with crimes like this and topics later. Well, sons are hot-blooded, or should I say brothers. And so Simeon and Levi, the second and third sons, Reuben, Simeon, and Levi were all sons of Leah, his first wife, whom he did not love really. They they acted with deception, which they learned from their father. Well, you can marry our sister, but you have to become like the people of Shechem wanted to have allies. There weren't very many people around, and the more people you could get together, the stronger you were. Okay, we'll be families together with you. And so these young men said, but we are under the covenant of Abraham. You have to circumcise all the men in your town. And so they did this because it was the king and his son who needed to get out of this situation. And so when these people were hurting and weak and vulnerable from doing that, Simeon and Levi killed every man in the place. And Jacob was not happy about it, but he had not acted. He hadn't acted when he needed to have acted. And this story gets echoed later on after the law is given, hundreds of years later in the time of David. David had a number of wives, and he had lots of sons and daughters. And one of his daughters was named Tamar, and she was very beautiful. And one of her half-brothers, in fact, the oldest of David's sons, forced himself on her. He raped her. And David didn't do anything about it, even though it was a crime. Because now the heir to the dynasty was in trouble. He didn't act. He wanted it to blow over. Well, things like that don't blow over for brothers. And her brother, this other fellow's half-brother, killed him. Fathers need to act sometimes. And that whole incident caused a disaster for David. He temporarily lost the kingdom, and his son Absalom ended up dead, as well as the son who committed the crime in the first place. Sometimes men need to act. And that's why the whole call of men to leadership in the church and in families is so insistent. It's from the first chapters of the Bible. Adam was the guy who was created first and told, this is how it is. This is the tree of life. This is the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Don't eat from this tree or you will die. And then when Eve came along and the serpent came along, he just stood there and watched her get talked into taking this fruit and eating it. He didn't lead. That's why it's so important. It's important in the Bible narrative. It's important to this day. That's how we're designed, and that's the way it is. So let's press on with our story. Verse 12. Now, Joseph's brothers had gone to graze their father's flocks near Shechem, ironically, back there. And Israel said to Joseph, as you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, and I'm going to send you to them. Very well, he replied. So he said to him, go and see if all is well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring word back to me. Then he sent him off from the valley of Hebron, where he was living. So Joseph, as a favored son, was home, apparently. And when Joseph arrived at Shechem, a man found him wandering around the fields and asked him, what are you looking for? And he said, I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they are grazing the flocks? They moved on from here, the man said. I heard them say, let's go to Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance before he reached them, and they plotted to kill him. Guess what they saw coming over those hills? His coat. Who could miss that coat? The coat that says, our father loves this little snot-nosed brat more than he cares about us at all. They remembered. And it wasn't just a petty sibling rivalry either. It was a deep hatred. We were with Dad when things were rough. We grew up when he was struggling to build a family. But we saw how he felt about us when we came back from Haran. You see, if you go back a couple of chapters, when Jacob came back to the land of Canaan, he had to deal with his brother Esau, who was the reason he left in the first place. And he heard word that Esau was coming with 400 men. That's never a good sound or a sign. When somebody who hated your guts last you knew is coming with 400 guys. And Jacob is here with all his flocks and his herds and his wives and his kids. Oh, yeah.